Can I help you? I turned to find a young woman in business attire. I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm looking for a young woman in a red scarf and a large man native with long hair. She was dismissive. There's no one like that who's come through here. You're sure? Well, since I came out of my office. I pulled out my badge wallet and flipped it open. If I were to come through these doors, is there any other way out of this suite? She glanced up from my badge. There's a stairwell at the end of the hall. Flipping the wallet closed, I tucked it away and headed in the direction she'd indicated. Where does it go? To the catwalk and roof going up and then downward toward the ground floor and storage areas. If you see said large native man, please tell him which way I went. And if I see the girl? Lock her in a broom closet, I called back and hustled down the hallway to where there was a solid-looking metal door. I peered through the small window into the stairwell that led both up and down, then pushed the door open and stepped onto the concrete surface. If I were trying to escape, I'd have gone to ground level, but Henry would have made that same assumption. I looked up. Why would you go to the roof? The thought was dumb, so I started down, but then stopped. I looked up the stairwell, at the flights I would have to climb just to get to the door on the roof. Why in the world would she go that way? I started down, but then again stopped. Shaking my head at myself, I turned around and started up, clomping the stairs as I went, figuring if Henry had gone in the other direction, at least he'd know where to find me. After 8 flights, I was starting to regret my choice when I came to another security door that led onto a catwalk above the basketball court, which I assumed led to the roof. There was nowhere else to go, so I pushed the door open and found myself in the uppermost corner of the arena, overlooking the highest seating section. I paused as the Navajo Eagles made a fast break with quick passes that zoomed by the Lady Morning Stars before laying it up in a reverse. The catwalk was caged with walkways that strung out in all directions, including to where the scoreboard was suspended. The catwalk I was on ran along the end of the building and then reversed in a stairwell that led up to the roof. If anybody had come this way, that was where the person had to go. Swallowing, I looked up and began climbing again, and after a few more minutes, I was standing at another door, striped yellow and black, that read, "This door locks from the outside when closed." Pushing the door open, I looked under the snow-covered roof. There was a brick lying just inside. I reached down and slipped it in the tread. Stepping out, I glanced around, my breath fogging my view as hard, sleet-like flakes descended at a ready angle from the pervasive wind. The rim rocks were relatively close to the eastern side of the building. Moving past the large HVAC unit that was humming away at my left, I turned the corner of the access structure and looked around the vast roof, easily the size of 2 football fields. There were more HVAC units scattered in equal increments, but no other door openings, only one way up and one way down. I took a few more steps before deciding I'd made a mistake, and, shivering in my shirt sleeves, started to turn to go back down when I saw something. Something red. She was there, to the right, standing at the railing about 100 yards away, the scarf in her hand. She stood at the edge of the railing buttress to the east, overlooking the alleyway where we had come in the building. She was leaning out, looking southwest at the Beartooth Mountains. I kept my eyes on her profile as I moved toward her, her dark hair swirling in the vortex of wind that Arena GM Bill Dutcher had mentioned. She looked exactly as she had in the poster. It was only as I got closer that I saw her lips moving. She was singing, just the way Lyndon Iron Bull had described, and it was the saddest song I had ever heard. The silvery sounds mimicked the song her sister had sung on the basketball court less than 30 minutes ago, and if I hadn't believed my eyes, I would have sworn it was Jaya singing now. I stopped about 20 feet away, unsure of what to do. I wanted to speak out to her, but was afraid I might startle her. Bring me back. I don't belong here, and I want to go home. She raised her leg, placing a knee on top of the edge of the railing. Jeannie. She froze. Jeannie, I need you to get away from that railing. She stayed like that for a long moment, her hair still gyrating around her head from the updraft of the northeast wind that whirlpooled between the building and the rimrock cliffs that were only 75 feet away. Then she turned her head toward me for a moment, before maneuvering her body the rest of the way onto the rail, where she sat, facing me. I took a step toward her. "Jeannie." Gracefully, she perched there, looking at me, her face partially hidden so that I could no longer see her lips moving when she spoke. "Bring me back. I'm trying." I took another step. "You need to give me your hand. I don't belong here. I know that, and there are a lot of people worried about you." I took another step and was now only about 10 feet away from her. Her hand came up, and she gently parted the hair so that I could now see the ebony eyes, so dark they almost seemed black. The high cheekbones. She and Jaya could have been twins. "I want to go home." A blast of cold air hit her face again as she flew backward, disappearing over the edge as I dove for her hand, the scarf she'd been holding, blowing through the air on the updraft, slapping me in the face as I stumbled forward, clutching the railing. Pulling the scarf off my eyes, I looked over the edge to the entrance of the building below. There was nothing. I stared at the concrete walkway 90 feet down. No sign of her body. Turning to look at the snow-covered roof, I saw only one set of footprints leading to where I stood. My own.